and it's time for our monthly get-together with Dr. Stephanie Jones of Pinches Medical. Good morning, Dr. Jones. What should we talk about today?
Hi, Simon. Lovely to be here. Thanks for inviting me again. Well, we've got a lot to talk about today. I'm not sure we'll get through it all. We're going to talk about epilepsy following the death of the recent star Cameron Boyce, and just make sure that people understand how to manage a seizure. And then we're going to talk about a couple of other things as well. Psoriasis, which is a common skin condition, and bedwetting, that's something that affects a lot of our children. So, yeah, there's a lot to get through.
Yeah, lots to talk about. Okay, what should we get started with?
So let's start with psoriasis. So psoriasis is a skin condition that can cause red, sort of flaky, crusty patches of skin that have a sort of silvery scale appearance on them. And they normally appear on your elbows, knees. You can sometimes get them in your scalp and on your lower back, but they can affect anywhere on your body. Obviously, if they're in your scalp, then they can cause real flakiness and the appearance of dandruff.
How common is it? What kind of effect does it have on the skin?
Well, it's quite a common skin condition, more common than you might think, actually. It affects 2% of people, or 1 in 50 in the UK. And it can happen to anyone. It can start at any age. But most commonly, it seems to happen in adults that are under 35, and men and women are affected equally. And it can go on for your entire life. So it's something that people can just have to manage and live with, and you do get flares every so often as well. So we don't understand the causes and the whole cause of this psoriasis condition, but we do know it's not infectious. So if you do know someone with psoriasis, you can't catch it from them. And we know it doesn't scar, and it's caused by a sort of build-up of skin cells that are not being sloughed off like they normally would be, and so they stay on the skin, and that's what creates these patches. And we think there's probably environmental factors, because there are some triggers for people, and you know, it does tend to run in families, so there could be some genetic factors as well.
Yeah, so all sorts of factors, quite common as well. How can it be best treated?
Well, in most cases, the first treatment you'll get will be some sort of cream that you can put on, and they tend to be what we call vitamin D analogues. So they're a type of vitamin D that you can put on your skin, and actually that might be interesting, because some people's psoriasis actually responds to sun exposure. So as long as you don't get burned, sometimes psoriasis can actually improve when you have some UV ray treatment, or just being exposed to the normal sunlight. It's important to make sure that you have some of these specific treatments for psoriasis, because a lot of people try and treat them with steroid creams, and the steroid creams do seem to work because they take down the inflammation, but then it just quickly comes back, sort of rebounds back when you stop using it, if you don't actually get on top of it with these specific psoriasis creams as well. If they're not effective, those creams, or it's quite severe, then we can actually use this UV therapy, and that's called phototherapy. And sometimes there are some more powerful creams that we can use that are types of immune suppressants, so that we can do that, and we can also use systemic treatments that are either injected or taken orally.
And what sort of problems does this psoriasis cause?
Psoriasis, particularly moderate to severe psoriasis, is associated with other conditions such as anxiety, depression, and sometimes the harmful use of alcohol. Also, because it could be an immune condition, it does seem to increase the risk of heart disease and stroke, and treatment for psoriasis might actually reduce that risk. It can also be associated with other conditions like diabetes and obesity, high cholesterol, blood clots, high blood pressure. So there's a lot of surrounding conditions that can be associated with psoriasis. There is a small increased risk of skin cancer, because obviously it's an inflammatory condition of the skin. So that's it for psoriasis. And obviously, if anyone's got any questions or suffers from psoriasis, we've had some real success stories in Pinches, so that we've actually managed to get some people's psoriasis under control that's been really difficult for them.
And today we're talking with Dr. Stephanie Jones of Pinchu's Medical. All your health and well-being questions, get them through to us at silt1069.com. Hello again, Dr. Jones. What should we talk about next?
So let's talk about bedwetting. Now, this is something that not many people like to talk about, and it's important that we have a bit of openness about it because it is a really common condition. And when I was working as a paediatrician, we were told that it's about 10% in up to 5-year-olds and about 5% in up to 10-year-olds. So actually, you know, most people think, well, kids of the age of 2 should be out of nappies and, you know, they shouldn't be wetting the bed anymore and what's wrong with my child. But actually, it could just be normal. This could just be a normal variant and your child is just taking a bit longer than others and we just have to deal with it. So, you know, it might not be anything to worry about. Obviously, if it's a new condition, if they've had bladder control and then they suddenly start wetting the bed for, you know, no obvious reason, there might be some stress or there might be some sort of reason, behavioural reason that, you know, for some reason they might have started doing it. But they might also have something wrong like a water infection. So if it's new, then it is worth seeing a doctor about because, you know, there might be something that we can do to treat that. But if it's just something that's always been there, you know, we just have to think about managing that in with simple measures, really. And it will, in the majority of cases, it will just resolve because the child just grows out of it. So as they learn to get bladder control in the night as well as in the day, it will just all get better.
Right, so what are these measures? What measures can we actually take?
Well, let's start with the simple things. So, obviously, if you make the child visit the toilet before they go to bed so that they have an empty bladder before they sleep, then obviously if they do wet the bed, there'll be less of it and it's less likely to happen because they have an empty bladder to start off with. Make sure that they have a bedroom that's got easy access to a toilet, or that they have easy access to a toilet somehow, you know, they don't have to go through any sort of safety gates or something to get there. And, you know, use sheets, plastic sheets, so that, you know, if it does happen, then it's easily cleaned up. And give them some sort of positive rewards when they have dry nights. So, you know, if they wake up in the morning and they haven't wet the bed, then really celebrate that and really make a big fuss of them. If they've been toilet trained for longer than 6 months, then try leaving them without nappies on. So a lot of people leave nappies on their children when they wet in the night. And sometimes this can make them lazy and they feel like, oh, well, I don't need to use the toilet. If that's the case and they seem to have been toilet trained for long enough, and you think you can trust them at night, that they actually do have control, it's just behavioural, then you could try it and use star charts and stickers and rewards. And this is all for if they're under 5, really, that works the best.
What about, though, if your child is over 5?
So if it's not happening very often and they're older than 5 and they have bladder control during the day, then it's probably just an occasional thing that they just need to grow out of. So you'd wait and see. If it is going on and you think it's behavioural or you think that there's another issue, you know, it's worth going having a chat with the doctor and making sure that there's nothing else causing it. There are some sort of alarm systems that you can get where if the bed gets wet, then an alarm goes off and reminds the child to go and check and go to the loo. And then there were a few treatments that we can give, like tablets, that can actually help in the short term. Obviously, we don't want to give children medication in the long term if it can be avoided. But if they're having a sleepover at a friend's house or if they're going on a school trip, you know, it might be worth exploring some of these options because there can be some sort of short-term solutions that you can look into. There are other things that we can do about it, so that's not the end of the road, but I think if you were going to do anything more complicated, it would be important to seek specialist advice at that point. And you know, there might be other factors going on that we might need to look into. So, you know, although in the rare occasions it can be quite a disruptive issue, actually, for the most part, it is quite a normal thing, and a lot of kids do get affected by it, and it's just something that they'll just grow out of.
Okay, Dr. Jones, thank you very much. We're taking your questions to Dr. Stephanie Jones of Pinches Medical. You can do that, just post your queries right now if you follow the link at silk1069.com. More from Dr. Jones coming up. It's our monthly get-together with Dr. Stephanie Jones of Pinches Medical. All your questions through our website. Thanks very much for those. So, Dr. Jones, what's next this morning?
So, let's talk about epilepsy. So, a lot of people are worried about epilepsy, and it's mainly fear of the unknown, because we really don't understand it, and there isn't much spoken about it, and a lot of people don't like to talk about it, and you know, obviously the idea of convulsions is something that scares a lot of people. So I think it's important to start a conversation if you know someone with epilepsy, and just ask them how it is for them, and you know, what should you do, what would they like you to do, or how would they like you to treat them. And actually, as we've seen, you know, in the recent news, there's been this famous actor, Cameron Boyce, who recently died due to epilepsy. So it is important that we know how to manage seizures, and the more people who understand what to do in the event of a seizure, the better, and the more confidence that people can have then at doing the right thing, because it is possible to make it worse if you don't know what you're doing. But on the whole, you know, there are a few sort of simple measures that you can undertake if someone is having a seizure in front of you and you're there to help them.
Right, so if somebody's having a seizure, what should we be doing?
So if you're there while someone's having a seizure, and seizures can be all sorts of different types of things, but on the whole, if someone just drops to the floor in front of you and maybe their muscles start shaking, you know, and you know that they've not just been hit by a rock on the head or knocked down by a car or whatever, you know that they just literally collapsed in front of you and there was no real reason for it, then don't panic. That's the first thing. So take a look at the time, because how long they're in that seizure is actually very important. So if you just have a quick look at the time and look around you to see if they're in danger. So obviously if they've fallen into the road, then don't put yourself at risk running into the road, into traffic, but just make sure that you get help and stop the traffic and pull them, you know, out of the busy road if that's where they've landed. Or if they're banging their head against something or there's something sharp near them, you know, try and move anything away from them. And if you've got something soft that you can put under their head, then fine. But really just to try and leave them where they are until the seizure is finished. If they have, I don't know, tight clothing, like a tie around their neck or something that you think might be obstructing their breathing, then that, you know, it might be okay to loosen that tie just to make sure that they can breathe while it's happening. But in general, try and let them, you know, let the convulsion finish, and then keep the, you know, make sure you've got some help around you. So if there's anybody else that can help, just to stand there, and if it's going on longer than a few minutes, you're going to need to call an ambulance, because obviously if it's going on and on, then someone's going to need to intervene.
And what about next? What should we do once the convulsions stop?
So when the convulsions have stopped, the person's not going to know where they are. They're going to be confused. They might be sleepy. You know, they might vomit. It's very difficult to say what's going to happen, actually. So you need to stay with them until they're fully awake and back to their normal self again. And if they're lying on their back, then it's best to lie them on their side in what's called the recovery position. So if you can go on the NHS website, actually, and look up what to do if someone has a seizure, and they've got some good pictures there about what the recovery position is like. And also, we're going to have a blog on the Pinches Medical and website so that you can, you know, to give you a little bit more information about what to do and how to react if someone has a seizure in front of you. But yeah, once the convulsions have stopped, take another look at the time and see how long it was, because it's usually not as long as you think. It feels like forever when you're standing there and someone's having a seizure, but actually when you look at the time, it's probably been about 2 minutes. So yeah, just make a note of the time and then, you know, have a little chat with them and make sure they're fully back to normal and you know, ask them what they want to do, whether they need you to escort them somewhere. A lot of people think that it's a good idea to start trying to fish around in people's mouths for some reason. So, you know, that's something not to do. So basically just leave somebody alone, you know, until you're fully satisfied that, you know, if you didn't see them choking, then there's really no reason to start fishing around in their mouths. And likewise, if they're still a little bit drowsy or not quite back to fully conscious, don't give them anything to eat or drink because then they might choke. So just stay with them and keep talking to them.
Right, and you mentioned before different types of seizures, different effects that these can have.
So yeah, there are lots of different types of seizures, and basically the seizure is caused by electrical activity in the brain. So it really all depends which bit of the brain gets affected. Now, the type of seizures that I've just been talking about, those convulsions where someone's just completely on the floor and their limbs are shaking, they're called tonic-clonic or grand mal convulsions, and that's caused by generalised electrical activity throughout the whole brain. Now, what could happen for some people is that that could be caused by a particular medical condition. You know, it could be that that's the first time they've ever had this happen to them. If that's the case, it could be something like encephalitis, which is an inflammation of the brain, or meningitis, which you've all heard of. And really, if that's happening, if it's the very first time someone's ever known to have a seizure, then you don't just hesitate, you just call an ambulance, because really they need urgent treatment. But if someone's known to have epilepsy, then it's worth having a conversation with them before this happens, if you can, so that you understand what it is to expect, because seizures can come in all sorts of different shapes and sizes. So, for example, a seizure may just be what we call an absence seizure, which is where the person just loses consciousness, but they're still standing or sitting, looking completely normal, but they just switch off. So their brain just doesn't function for a while, and they just don't know where they are when they come around. So that's called an absence, and they might look like they're ignoring you, or they're just not with it. You know, you might just think they're a bit confused, and actually it might be a seizure that you're witnessing. So if that's the case, it's worth knowing about, and then you can make sure that that person's safe and that they don't, I don't know, if they're in the middle of driving, or hopefully they wouldn't be driving if they knew they had epilepsy. But, you know, if there's something that they're in the middle of doing, that you can make sure that they're kept safe. So there are other types of seizures that you could get, and it would depend on which bit of the brain gets affected, so it could be anything. But sometimes people can actually still be walking around, but can be doing repetitive movements like lip smacking, moving one of their arms in a repetitive way or something, and they're not fully conscious. So these people could wander into the road or put themselves in harm's way without realising it. So if that's the sort of seizure that someone has, then obviously, you know, they'll need you to just gently guide them away from danger and stay with them until they're back to normal, their normal self. And then obviously afterwards they might be a bit drowsy, so it's worth knowing about. And then some people might be in a wheelchair, and so obviously, you know, if someone's collapsed on the floor, you've been told to just leave them on the floor. Well, same thing really. If someone's strapped into a wheelchair, then they're probably safe. If they look like they're falling out, then obviously if you can help them to the floor if they're not strapped in, so that they are safe, so that they don't fall out and bang their head. But if they're strapped in, there's really no reason to start undoing straps to try and put them on the floor. Just leave them in the wheelchair and make sure the brakes are on, make sure they don't roll off into a road or something. So just make sure that they stay where they are and that they're safe. And that's just about it for epilepsy, really. And, you know, obviously, if anyone's got any concerns or knows someone who's got epilepsy, you should have a conversation about it. And we've got this blog on the website from Pinches Medical and Wellbeing. And also, I've written a piece in the Local People magazine recently. So there's a little bit in there to try and make sure that the more people that are aware of how to manage a seizure, the better. And then, you know, having a conversation with people is important as well, because, you know, Cameron Boyce, this famous actor, you know, he demonstrates that it is possible to live a normal life and be very successful with epilepsy. So, you know, and it was really unfortunate that he had his seizure in his sleep and there was nobody there. So, unfortunately, he died. And this is a serious condition, but if it's managed properly, you know, people can still live their normal lives as much as they can. So that's all I had to say about epilepsy. So if anybody's got any thoughts or questions or wants to talk about any other issues, then they just need to email into Silk FM, and I'll be waiting to hear from you to see what we discuss next time.
That's right, yes, you can do that right now. Get your questions in for our next month's get-together. Just click on the link at our homepage at silk1069.com. So, Dr. Stephanie Jones from Pinches Medical, thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure, as usual.